Welcome to Product Brand Management, Chapter 16. This chapter is about brand protection. The objective of this chapter is to understand the various legal measures adopted and practiced in order to protect your brand. Now, if you remember, in one of the first few sessions, we actually said that a characteristic of a brand is also that it has protectability. If you can't protect your brand legally, if you have no legal recourse to protect your brand, then it's not by definition a brand itself. For example, if I have a certain brand that says my name or says my company's name, there's a certain logo, and I have built a certain amount of brand equity around that brand because of my product quality, because the fact that people like my product, people like what my brand brings to their life as well. Now, if this brand is used by somebody else on their product illegally, then I'm losing out on my consumers because that quality may or may not be good. That person shouldn't have the right in the first place to be able to use my brand on their products, which is why I should be able to have some sort of legal recourse. I should be able to go to the court and say that this man or this organization is using my brand illegally, and that is not okay. We have to stop this right now. So that is how to do it is the objective of this chapter. And we'll be studying intellectual property, we'll be studying industrial design property, we'll be studying patents, copyrights, trademarks. We'll be basically studying all the things that come together to actually help you protect your brand. So infringement and intellectual property rights is what we'll begin with. Infringement is encroachment, breach, or violation of a certain law or regulation or even a contract. In the brand world, in the marketing world, the person that I mentioned, for example, if some other company is using my brand on their product, then that is a violation, that's an infringement on my rights. As long as I have my brand protected, trademarked, copyrighted, etc., to my name, then that person or another organization is not legally allowed to use my brand name on their products. That is an infringement. Now, this is also called trespassing. It's illegal entering. All of these things are legal definitions of infringement. It is in the law of patents and copyrights, the improper use of a patent, writing, graphic, or trademark without permission, without notice, and especially without contacting the person who owns the copyright or the patent for payment of a royalty. Without this kind of a contact, without these contracts, without the copyright or patent or a graphic, you cannot use somebody else's trademark. Intellectual property is basically divided into two categories, industrial property and copyright. Let's look at the benefits of intellectual property, and then let's look at what is industrial property and what is copyrights. The benefits of intellectual property are that it balances the interest of innovators as well as the general public. It encourages creators and inventors to fearlessly perform as they realize that their works are also secured and protected. The focus is on creating and inventing, leading to newer technologies and innovations, and in turn creating jobs and industries. It is also a catalyst for economic development and social well-being. It fuels researchers and innovators to continue inventing and researching, thus helping the world to have newer products and a better quality of life. It inspires believability, trust, and confidence in various products and brands that we use in our daily lives. Now, how does all of this come along? Intellectual property. If I have created a certain design for a product, for example, if I have invented a toothpaste, I'm the first person in the world to make a toothpaste. Now, if I am to be encouraged, or if people like me are to be encouraged to continue making more personal hygiene products, for example, then in that case, I should be ensured that I will actually be rewarded for my invention. So I should be able to go to a company and say, you know what, you can use my invention, which is a toothpaste, under your brand name as long as you pay me money for it. And the government of the country, the government of the land, will ensure that I get that money because I am the owner of that particular right. Similarly, I can take it to any other company and say, I have invented it, the government has given me the right to be able to sell you the rights to use my product, to use my invention. And this is exactly how an environment is formed in which all sorts of people are encouraged to invent, they are encouraged to make new things, to ensure that better quality of life all over the world for people prevails. That won't be possible without new inventions. And new inventions will not happen if people are scared. People will be scared if they are not protected in their rights to be able to actually charge money for what they've invented from other people. For example, in the toothpaste example, if I invent a toothpaste and I go to a company and say, I have invented it, why don't you pay me some money to use this product? And that company takes the sample, reverse engineers the process and makes toothpaste on their own. If they do that, then they can actually produce toothpaste on their own, which they'll in any case do, but not pay me any money for it. I'm not protected. Therefore, I have no more motivation to actually invent anything new. And anyone who knows the story of how I was duped by this company will not be encouraged to invent anything anymore. Overall, the quality of life all over the world will go down. This is why it's very important to have intellectual property rights. Now let's look at what are patents. A patent basically is a document. It's issued upon application by a government office which describes an invention and creates a legal situation in which a patent invention can normally only be exploited with the authorization of the owner of the patent. So if I have invented something like a toothpaste, I can actually apply to the government for a patent. I can go to the government and say that no one else has invented this particular object in the past. I have a specific process using which I have arrived at this invention. I can produce it over and over again if I want. I want to be the owner of this patent. So the government will do its due diligence and it will give me a patent for it. The patent will be a document. I will have this document with me, which will be valid for about 20 odd years. In different countries, the number of years varies. And I will, when I go to a new company and I say, you can use this product using the formula I have invented, I'll show my patent document, and the company then is obliged to pay me money every time they use my formula to create that toothpaste. This is how patents become, this is how patents as a method for intellectual property protection really help in getting the invention, getting the discovery environment going, overall helping in improving quality of life. Types of patents are utility, design and plant patents. Now these are pretty self-explanatory. Anything which is used for day-to-day utility, that kind of an object gets a utility patent. Anything which is a patent on design per se, saying that this design is unique and therefore I need a patent on this design, you get a design patent. And then there are plant patents, because a certain process can only be taking place in a certain way in a plant, in a manufacturing plant for instance, that kind of an environment, that gets you a plant patent. The types of applications for patents are normally ordinary applications for patents of addiction, divisional applications, conventional applications and national phase applications under the PCT. India actually is a member state in respect for patents. Now why is it important for India to be a member state in respect for patents? Supposing I'm an American company, and as a part of my research and development initiatives, I have been able to create a new molecule for a medicine. Now this molecule is already being exploited in the US thanks to me, and I'm the patent holder, so I'm earning money on that. Now the company that has created this molecule, who is the patent owner, wants to launch in another country. So unless that country, the host country, so supposing from the US I want to come to India and actually produce the same molecule in India, produce and sell the same molecule in India, unless India also recognizes the same patent that has been given to me by the American government, my way forward in this new country in India will not be successful, because somebody else may be able to copy it without any fear of law if the Indian government is not recognizing that patent. India is a member state in respect for the patents. There are various organizations like the World Intellectual Property Organization, the WTO, and a convention that establishes World Intellectual Property Organization. Now, India is a member state of all these organizations. There are more conventions, the Paris Convention for the Protection of Industrial Property, the Patent Cooperation Theory Treaty, and the Budapest Treaty. Now, all of these treaties and conventions work towards ensuring that countries all over the world, as many countries as possible, recognize patents that are actually patented in some other country. This also becomes an issue internationally. When you do international business, this becomes an issue sometimes, because sometimes countries do not have the same patent laws. Even if a patent of the US is recognized in India, that does not mean that the laws governing patent are the same as the laws governing patents in India. So for example, while in the US, if I'm a patent holder, I will get royalty on every single time my formula, my molecule is put into production. In India, maybe the royalty is lesser, or maybe I don't need to get royalty every single time. All this is hypothetical. What I'm trying to say is the laws can be different. And if laws are different, then patent protection undergoes a bit of a problem, which is why international business is a challenge. And it is very, very important to ensure that there are ironclad agreements actually covering you as far as your patents are concerned. Now let's move on to trademarks. What are trademarks? A recognizable sign, a word, name, symbol, or icon that is used by the creators of goods and services to identify them and distinguish them from those made by others. As simple as that, it's just a recognizable sign. For example, a brand name, a logo unit, is normally trademarked by a company. Let us look at trademark protection. It helps identify one brand from another. So a Reebok icon, mnemonic, or logo unit will be very different from a Nike icon or logo unit. If I'm a random manufacturer who has my own small factory making some sort of sports shoes, and if I use the Nike logo illegally on my shoes, I might actually be able to sell them off as Nikes and make a lot of money, but that is completely illegal. Trademark protection ensures that I'm not able to do it without actually facing the brunt of the law. It offers owners the exclusive right to use a protected mark or symbol on their products. Now, you have to understand that trademarks are offered in certain situations, and we will come to those as well. But they authorize owners to permit others to use the mark and symbol, mark or symbol, in return for some payment. So for instance, if I'm Nike and if I want somebody else to use my logo, or if somebody else wants to use my logo on their products, for a payment, I may actually permit it. But the conditions will be very stringent. The quality control will be very stringent. Trademark protection also promotes initiative and enterprise worldwide by rewarding their owners with recognition and financial profit. I have a motivation to ensure that my brand is a trademark brand. Why? Because every time the trademark is used by somebody, I can actually get money out of it. I can get some sort of royalty out of it. It also keeps off unfair competition. It facilitates cross-border trade between different countries and states. It enables individuals or organizations with skills and enterprise to produce and market goods and services in a fair and just market environment. Trademarks are legally enforced by courts that have the authority to prevent trademark infringement. Now, all of these are salient features of trademark protection, how trademark protection really helps businesses. Let's look at what are the kinds of marks that can be registered. Marks which are clearly different and distinguishable from other marks, marks which have some connection to the goods and services sold by the entity, and those that have unique graphical representation. And the marks that cannot be registered are those that contain elements that may hurt religious sentiments, which are considered obscene or likely to give rise to scandals. Those that create confusion amongst consumers with regard to the nature of product and ownership, and which are prohibited under the Emblems and Name Act of 1950, which can actually be found online. That act seeks to prevent improper use of trademarks. Now, I'll just go back to this. Marks that can be registered. Now, if I have a logo unit and if I want to trademark it, first of all, it has to be clearly different from other marks, not just in the same category, but across categories. So for instance, if I want to use a swoosh, something which looks very similar to the Nike mark, and if I go to the trademarking authority, I will not be allowed to trademark it, because it is easy for me to use that mark once it is trademarked to me on some other products and actually fool the public into thinking that I'm selling a Nike good, even if I name my product something else. Supposing I name my product Tike, T-I-K-E, and with the same swoosh or the similar looking swoosh, the trademark authority will make sure that I do not get a trademark for it, because if I do, I will be able to fool people into thinking that this is a Nike good, and I'll be able to get much more money off of them for an inferior quality product. Marks should have some connection to the goods and services, and those cannot be registered are those that actually contain elements that hurt religious sentiments or the ones that create confusions. Also, you have to understand that the rejection of a trademark registration can also occur on the basis of the fact that you don't have a proper mark that you are registering. For example, if I want to form a new brand, if I want to launch a new brand, and if I call it a word which already exists in the dictionary, supposing I want to call it river or glass, those are words that exist in the dictionary. Now, I can't go and trademark the word glass. That is not trademarkable. What I can trademark is a specific interpretation of the word glass. So if I write the word glass in a specific font, in a specific way, make an image out of it, define what are the ways in which I can use it, only then can I go ahead and actually get that trademark. And then somebody else can also use the word glass as a trademark. It's just that they'll have to use it in a completely different way, so that there is no confusion between the two things. A word like apple, for instance, is a prime example. Apple is a regular word. Apple, the word, cannot be trademarked. I can also use the word apple on my products. But if I use the word apple on my products, I have to ensure that the font, the way it's written, the colors, especially the logo that appears alongside, are completely different from actual apple. If they're even slightly similar, A, I'll be refused trademark registration, and B, if I go ahead and use it anyway, Apple the company can file a suit against me for improper use of trademarks. So basically, the point of trademark registration is to ensure that there is no confusion in the minds of consumers. Your product is yours, your competitor products are theirs. Products across categories can only use trademarks that belong to them. Words cannot be trademarked unless they're written in a specific way. The best way to actually trademark your brand is to invent a word. So for example, Google is an invented word. It's not a word that already existed in the dictionary. So it is easy to trademark the word Google. You can actually trademark it. And you can also trademark the way in which you'll write it, the colors with which you'll write it. So the most important thing to understand is, if you're going to be trademarking a brand, it is advisable to actually invent a new name. Let's look at some of the grounds on which trademark registrations can be rejected. So there are absolute grounds in which you're not clearly distinguishable, your trademark is not clearly distinguishable, and you do not have a unique representation. So I spoke about how to distinguish and uniquely represent your brand. And if it's not uniquely represented, it's likely to cause confusion amongst consumers, and therefore it is rejected. The product quality may or may not, the product quality described by the trademark may or may not be true. On those grounds also, an absolute rejection of a trademark application that can happen. Those that are already used customarily in a product, in a particular trade or a language, and therefore can be confused with other products. For example, if I'm wanting to launch a cell phone and my brand name is just called cell phone, now that is not something that any trademark authority will give me a trademark for, simply because the language in the particular cell phone's business, the word cell phone is already customarily used, so it can be confused with absolutely any product. If I name my product cell phone, I can actually say, this is a cell phone. I say, this is a cell phone by the company cell phone, which is not good for anybody in the competition, which is why such things cannot be trademarked. Now, generic terms that are used internationally in a non-proprietary capacity, can again not be used. Those that create confusion through some sort of deception, again, will be absolutely rejected. Those which may hurt religious and or personal sentiments of people from any section or class in India will also be absolutely rejected as far as trademarks are concerned. Also, trademarks which are similar or identical to the actual shape of the product and then therefore can actually lead to some sort of a confusion. This leads to a confusion because if I'm depicting in my trademark of the product itself, which is generic to the category, then I'm trying to actually stand for that product. When my brand is trying to say that I'm the one that owns the product itself, but the product is generic. So therefore, the trademark authority will say a no to me. This whichever trademark indicates that the nature of the product in a way that causes confusion is also rejected. The trademark that artificially increases the perceived and monetary value of the product, artificially increases the perceived value, is also rejected. And any trademark which is considered obscene is also absolutely rejected. Now, other than absolute rejections, there are also grounds for relative rejections. So, trademarks which are identical or very similar to some other existing trademark or products, or for products or services in an identical trade or the same trade, those are rejected on relative grounds. So, for example, like I pointed out, supposing I want to use something that a trademark that looks very similar to the Nike trademark, it will be rejected on the relative ground because it will be said that this competing product in the same trade is actually looking the same as yours, which is why we cannot give you a trademark. Now, which are either identical or very similar to existing trademarks, but which are registered in a different trade, even those are not allowed. So if I want to use, for instance, a Nike on a water bottle, they actually are existing in water bottles. Supposing I want to use the word Nike on a car brand, I cannot use that. It's a different trade, but it is still, if I'm trying to use the identical or a similar logo on a completely different product category, it will be relatively rejected. Let's look at copyrights. Now, copyrights tend to provide protection for literary and artistic creations or works of authors, artists, and other creators. In general, if I have written something or if I have drawn something, then it should be my copyright. If it is complete, whatever I've written is original, is not copied from anywhere, it's not plagiarized, in that case, that is my copyright. If, for example, you write a blog, whatever you put on the blog, as long as it's original content, is automatically your copyright. The creators of the works which are copyrighted are generally known as right holders. Now, if you, for example, write a blog which is original content, then you are the copyright holder of that blog. What can you do? You can actually prohibit or authorize the production of whatever you've written in all forms, including print form, including sound recordings. So, for example, if you've written a blog, it is not allowed for anyone else without your permission to even record it on a recording device and put it up on the internet, for instance. It is not allowed because you're the copyright holder. Unless you allow it, it's not allowed. Public performance and communication to the public, again, you can authorize it, you can prohibit it. Unless you say that somebody can do it, they can't. Broadcasting, translation into other languages, and any kind of adaptation. Supposing you write a very good blog which can be actually adapted into a movie, or if you write a novel which can be adapted into a movie. If you write the novel, you are the right holder. If you are the right holder, then you have the right to actually sell the rights for an adaptation into a movie. Nobody can just look at a novel and say, I want to make a movie on this, and make a movie anyway. That can't happen. You have the right to block it. You have the right to authorize it or prohibit it. Let's look at some of the amendments. To conform with the World Intellectual Property Organization Copyright Treaty and the WPO Performances and Phonograms Treaty, then to protect music and film industry and address its concerns, to address the concerns of the physically disabled and protect the interests of authors of any works. These are where amendments have been done in order to protect these classes of people better. Amendments to the Copyright Act, amendments to the trademark laws, they've all been done in order to protect people, creators of work, much better. Amendments have been done to actually protect incidental changes. to remove operational facilities and for enforcement of the rights of creators of the work. Also, amendments to the Copyright Act in 2012 are extension to the copyright protection in the digital environment. So till before 2012, copyright protection was limited to the physical world, but now it has actually gone on to the digital world, and that or every right in the digital world is also now protected. Now let's move on from copyright into industrial design. Now industrial design can refer to ornamental or aesthetic aspects of an article and of a product or an article, and it may consist of three-dimensional features such as shape or surface, or two-dimensional features such as patterns, light and color. So any kind of product that you actually create in a completely unique way, it's an industrial design. I mean, it could be a 3D design, it could be a 2D design, it could be just shapes, surface, it could be lines, colors. You're actually the owner of that industrial design. Let's look at geographical indication. Now it is a sign which is used on goods that have a specific geographical origin and possess qualities of or a reputation due to their place of origin. It is protected under special laws for protection of geographical indications or appellations of origin. There are laws against unfair competition as well. Trademark laws in the form of collective marks or certification marks, consumer protection laws, and specific laws or decrees that actually recognize geographical indications. This is one of the reasons why it is very important to have a made-in label on absolutely any product that you buy. So if you buy a t-shirt or you buy a shirt, you buy a phone, everywhere it says made in which country, and that is a geographical indication. There are protections, geographical indications are actually protected, and it's a sign because you know that if it's produced in a certain country, there will be a certain amount of technology or efficiency that has gone behind it, a certain kind of quality that comes out of the country, which is why geographical indication is very, very important. Now we've covered industrial design, patents, intellectual property, trademarks, copyrights. Let's try and summarize this session for you. The categories of intellectual property are industrial property and copyright. Patents are documents issued upon application by a government office, which actually describes an invention and creates a legal situation in which the patent and invention can normally only be exploited with the authorization of the owner of the patent. A trademark, on the other hand, is a recognizable sign, a word, name, symbol, or icon, which can be used by the creators of goods and services to identify them and to distinguish them from those made by others. Industrial design refers to ornamental or aesthetic aspects of an article and may actually consist of three-dimensional features such as the shape or surface of an article, or two-dimensional features such as patterns, lines or colors. So this was the chapter about protection of your brands, protection of your logos, protection of your trademarks and copyrights. Thank you.